The first idea that we hear very often is what's called Ikvasa de Mashiach. Ikvasa de Mashiach means in the footsteps of the Mashiach. Now, why is it called in the footsteps of Mashiach? This refers to the period right before the Mashiach's coming. Why is it called in the footsteps of the Mashiach? Because when a person walks, he leaves footsteps, imprints. As time goes on, the imprint which he left in the sand or whatever fades away. When you can see the footprints of an individual, it means that he's right ahead of you. So therefore the time right before he comes is called Ikvasa de Mashiach. The footsteps of the Mashiach means he's right ahead of us. We're almost at that time. Now that time includes before the coming, or rather before the birth of the Mashiach, before he's born, the world is in a certain situation, and the simonim are given in the Gemara, and I had mentioned the entire idea of Tikbaris Hara, that there are many signs, proliferation of evil and so on. And also the Ikvas of the Mashiach also includes the time even after the Mashiach is born. However, even though the Mashiach is born, he himself does not know he's Mashiach. Now I'm referring specifically to Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben David comes later. But the first Mashiach is the Mashiach ben Yosef. And just like we find by Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu did not know he was Mashiach. In other words, he was the one appointed to take out Klal Yisrael and to give them the Torah until he was 80 years old. The same thing with Mashiach ben Yosef, he also won't know that he's Mashiach until after a certain amount of time. And in general we'll find the principle is that the Geula Achrona, the redemption, the last redemption, is very similar to the first. Hengu alti eschem achris gracious. Behold, I will redeem you in the end, just like I redeemed you in the beginning. So therefore there's a tremendous smichus, a tremendous relationship or comparison. The patterns in one geula are very similar to the patterns in the other. So therefore, Ikvasa de Mashiach basically refers to the time before the Hisgalus of the Mashiach, before the Mashiach himself knows that he is the Mashiach. And you have all the different kinds of events transpiring, that which is Gemara spoke and so on, Tikvah Sarah, and so on, those things which I had spoken about previously. Now, after the Mashiach is born, and he also knows about himself, we begin to see what's called Aschalta de Geula. Now I want to make one introduction, and that is, which I had forgotten, one thing, that is, that what will take place during the Mashiach, the entire sequence of events of the Emosa Mashiach, is open to a lot of dispute. There are Rishonim that hold certain ideas, some Rishonim hold different ideas. There's a lot of machlokes. Nobody really clearly knows what will transpire in terms of the sequence of events. The scenario, the sequence of events which I am going to relate, is based upi Kabbalah. In other words, the Zohar, the Ari, Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Metzatoi, the Vilna Gaon, the Mekubalim. According to the Kabbalah, this is basically the scenario, the sequence of events that transpire. The Rambam holds different ideas. However, the Rambam didn't have access to the Kabbalah, so therefore, you know, one could ask the complete authority of the Rambam's knowledge in these areas. One would defer to Kabbalah. But in any case, I just want to mention that there are machlokes and disputes, and I am following the sequence of events according to the Kabbalah, which of course has been accepted by most Klal Yisrael as valid and as authoritative exactly of what is going to take place, and also Kabbalah in terms of its entire understanding of the Bria, the creation. Now to return to the theme. So therefore, Ikvasa de Mashiach relates to the time period before the Mashiach is revealed, even after he's born. But as long as he's not revealed, it's still called Ikvasa de Mashiach. Now, what begins what's called Aschalta de Geula, which is the next period of time, the beginning of redemption. That's Aschalta de Geula, the beginning of redemption. What begins that time? And the answer to that is, as I had mentioned previously, that the Yechida, which is that which crowns the Mashiach, is in the hands of the Sitra Achra. I had mentioned this last week, Shurim. When that Yechida is freed from the hands of the Sitra Achra, when it's out of the klipas, which is a Kabbalistic term, that is the beginning of Aschalta de Geula, because then the Mashiach has his powers. So that's the beginning of the redemption itself. No one knows when that transpires. What time that will be, no one knows. But that is what's basically called the Kates. The Kates, or the end, refers to the time when the Mashiach, as a Mashiach, exists. In other words, the Neshama of the Mashiach, which is the Yechida, which is in the hands of the Klipas or the Sitra Achra, the Satan, whatever you want to call him, when that is released, that is the end of the Yisurin of the Mashiach. That means that Klai Yisrael, Israel, Jews, have reached the time when they can be redeemed. That means all the suffering that had to have been brought has been completely fulfilled, and now what's called the Tikkun HaKloli, the general rectification of the Bria, has been reached. Therefore, the Mashiach can now begin his activities as a Mashiach. So when the Yechida leaves the Klipas, when it leaves the hands of the Sitra Achra, it means that the period of redemption now begins. Aschalta de Geula now begins. And therefore, so that specifically means that the Mashiach is crowned. That's what it means. Even though he's still not nisgalah to the world, nobody knows who he is, he knows who he is, and he is crowned. He now can begin actively fulfilling the task of what he has to do. So this is the Aschalta de Geula. Now, after that Aschalta de Geula, after the Yechida crowns the Mashiach then himself begins growing. Now again, I'm referring to the Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben David comes later. The first Mashiach is Mashiach ben Yosef. So therefore, when the Mashiach now is in the state of his being Mashiach, the anointed one, he now begins growing. All the difficulties and the obstacles which he had previously, obstacles which I mentioned previously, which had provided him with tremendous yisurin, pain, the obstacles which prevented him from learning Torah, obstacles which prevented him from becoming that tzaddik which he could become, these are removed because the Yechid is now no more in the Klipas. So the suffering is ended. Klai Yisrael is now a zeicha to be nigal, to be redeemed, and the Mashiach himself begins to grow. He begins to grow mitzat chokhma, mitzat Torah, and he also begins to grow mitzat tzidkis. And that's what Yeshaya in Nun Beis is referring to. Hine yaskel avdi, behold, my servant grows in chokhma, haskola, and yoram v'nisa v'gova mi'oid. Those are three lishonis which I mentioned previously, three expressions of growth. Growth especially in the area of Torah. And as I had mentioned previously, that Torah that he grows in is called the Or Rishon. It's that chokhma where he begins to perceive the entire unity of the Bria in Ruchnius, not only in Gashmius. In addition to that, he begins to have the chokhma of what each person's tachlis is, each person's purposes, why things happen to each person. He becomes obviously very unique in his understanding of what the entire world structure is about, what has to be done for the Eden. And he's of course Megala Torah in a different form. So therefore he grows in Chochma, in Torah in other words, and Tzidkis, of which he couldn't grow before. And that the fact that he couldn't grow, the obstacles which prevented him, provided him with those Yisurin, with which he can then help Klai Yisrael in the Golas, by his Yisurin. Now, as he begins to grow, it becomes obvious to people that this individual is unique. There's something different about him. People begin seeing a difference about this individual. And as a result of that, as a result of the fact that people see he's different, there's also a tremendous siyat d'shmaya, divine assistance, given to the Mashiach. The Mashiach ben Yosef then assumes what Yosef did, that v'chol asher osa hitzliach Hashem b'yodoy. By Yosef HaTzadik, in Te'im Breishis, it says, and everything that Joseph did, the Ribbono Shelom made matzliach. Anything he did. So in the beginning, when the Mashiach ben Yosef was basically had tremendous obstacles, and he was failing to a great extent, in his ruchnis endeavors, it is now the reverse, in the exact inverse proportion. Now, whatever he does has incredible hatzlacha, whatever he does. If he wants to sit in Makar of Eden, all of a sudden, Jews feel like returning to Yiddishkeit. He has an awesome hatzlacha. There's no more sitra achra to counter the Mashiach ben Yosef, to makatrig, in other words, to go to say that Klal Yisrael doesn't deserve it. Because the Kates has arrived. The time of redemption has arrived. And now is the time when redemption must occur. And the Rabbi Shalom Keref Ayin, Yeshua Sassem Keref Ayin, when the redemption of Klal Yisrael occurs, the time, then the Rabbi Shalom doesn't wait a second. Just like he didn't even wait for the matzah to become chometz. Jews must leave the entire, Sitra Achra, in other words, the forces of evil. In that case, it was Mitzrayim. Jews must leave. So therefore, the Mashiach begins to experience tremendous hatzlacha. And people see this individual as obviously a very unique individual. And we begin experiencing many of the psukim in the Novi about what the Rebbe Shalom says about Klal Yisrael in those days. Especially the Eshpoich Ruchi al Kol Boso, and I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Because the Mashiach Ayidei Teva, according to natural means, of course, is going to find it very difficult to make all Klal Yisrael from. But what the Rebbe Shalom does is he gives out a shefa, means an influence throughout the Bria, that is a tremendous spiritual striving. And therefore the Mashiach, of course, is able to makarav everybody in that way. Now, it's very important to remember that what the Mashiach will be Ayidei Teva, according to natural means. The Geula will not come according to supernatural means. The Geula will come according to natural means, which actually is even more astounding, that the Mashiach can do what I'm going to say he's going to do through natural means is really incredible. But that's important to understand, that it comes Ayidei Teva, natural means. And in fact, we, of course, observe the natural hachono, or preparation for the Mashiach, in terms of Eretz Yisrael. Of course, that the Jews got Eretz Yisrael back, which is unheard of, that a nation after 2,000 years of exile, it's unheard of that a nation should still exist and maintain its identity, let alone get back its country after 2,000 years of exile. But of course, we begin seeing in it some ideas of the hachon of Geula, that of course Eretz Yisrael must be in the hands of the Jews, and it must be built up, not the way it was desolate, and in order for the Mashiach, of course, to be able to bring everybody back to Eretz Yisrael. You also begin to see, interestingly enough, that, just to mention, since I mentioned something about Eretz Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael, when it was, it's the one who initiated, of course, the idea, basically, in terms of history, is Theodor Herzl, who, of course, was an incredible atheist. And then the ones who followed up on that, of course, were basically all Frei Yidden. And especially when we get to the Ben-Gurion, Moshe Sharet, this crowd, and so on, that we begin to see that Eretz Yisrael itself has to come through Sitra Achra. That even the Hachona of Eretz Yisrael, in terms of a time of Mashiach, has to come through a sinful manner, or Jews who are sinful. And that's the part of the idea of Sila Zozel, that in Yom Kippur you have a seer, a goat that goes to Lashem, to God, to sacrifice to God, and there's another goat that has to be thrown off the mountain. That the inyonim of the Hachon of the Mashiach, there's always something that has to go to the Sitra Achra in terms of his ketugim, his tainus, his complaints against Klal Yisrael. So therefore, in order to fool even the Sitra Achra, and to be master the entire inyan, to conceal the entire idea, then the ideas, of course, go through people, of course, who are atheists, people who are not from. So therefore, they, of course, are the ones who founded Eretz Yisrael, interestingly enough, and they are what's called the Erev Rav. Erev Rav means that multitude that Moshe Rabbeinu took with him when he went out of Egypt. And that Erev Rav, of course, was responsible for a tremendous amount of Yerido, downfall of Klal Yisrael. They are the ones who did the Chet HaEgel, and so on. And this Erev Rav, throughout the generations, has been responsible for a tremendous amount of Chatoim that Yidden have done. And Jews have suffered because of this mixed multitude that has gone out of Mitzrayim and their descendants. In any case, it would seem that these individuals would be part of that Erev Rav, and the Erev Rav itself would have Shlita over Eretz Yisrael. And interestingly enough, of course, we find that that has been taken away from them because labor lost, and basically labor is the party that represents all these people, and they have lost, and Menachem Begin of course has come in, and that would seem to indicate that the Shlita of the Erev Rav over Eretz Yisrael is gone. And you could see the entire election of Menachem Begin was very interesting. You see the Mamash, the Hashgach Protis, the scandal of Rabin before that, very interesting enough, just the way he won was Mamash looked clearly Hashgach Protis, the fact that he won it all. And we see that the Shlit of Klai Yisrael has been taken out of the hands of the Erev Rav and has been given in the hands of Middle. Because Begin himself is, of course, not a Benter, he's not a Tzaddik in any way, but at least he's not a Rosh in the sense that he's Mamish Machtes Rabin, where those people took Sephardic Jewry and Russian Jewry, whatever, and they made them all fry. They killed an entire generation of Jews. So you now have Eretz Yisrael in the neutral stance, and hopefully, of course, that is the Hachona from the Mashiach himself takes it over. Now, and that's just the ideas in terms of Eretz Yisrael. So the Mashiach ben Yosef again is recognized for his uniqueness. He has incredible Hatzlocha, and that Hatzlocha is all Ayidei Teva, according to natural means. And of course the Rebbeinu Shlom gives this Shefa, this tremendous influence in the Bria, in the universe, throughout the world, that there's a spiritual awakening, of course, in which the Mashiach can do his tasks. And the Mashiach ben Yosef does basically four tasks. And the first task is that he brings all Jews back to Eretz Yisrael. Now all Jews includes the 10 lost tribes, the Aseres HaShvatim. All Jews are brought back to Eretz Yisrael. And this task, of course, is incredible, because it's not so much what makes the task so difficult, of course, is that many Jews are so assimilated that they don't want to go back to Eretz Yisrael. There's no Indian even of Yiddishkeit anymore. Most Yidden today are fry. So therefore, in order to forget about the Frumah going to Eretz Yisrael, in order to get the Fryer to go back to Eretz Yisrael, imagine somebody has to give up all his real estate. His real estate, all his business ventures, his home, his beautiful, his beautiful situation. That, of course, is no mean task. And probably only a Mashiach can do such a thing. But in any case, the first task which the Mashiach has is that he brings all Klai Yisrael back to Eretz Yisrael, including the Aseres HaShvatim. So that itself is a unique phenomena, which of course has never occurred. While he's doing this, and the way this occurs is because the Mashiach, and the second task, is that he's Megala, that Torah, that Or Rishon, which I had spoken about, throughout the Bria, that he begins revealing a new idea in Torah. And he reveals the pnimius of Torah, the innermost idea, the internal structure of Torah itself. And that has such a profound influence on people, on Jews and so on especially, that he's able to turn around their hearts and bring everybody back to Eretz Yisrael. So the second task, or rather the task that's going on at the same time, is the Gilui Or Rishon, that the entire Or Rishon itself is in the Zgala by way of the Mashiach ben Yosef. The next task is that once he's got everybody in Eretz Yisrael, what happens is that the Beis HaMikdash is built, the third Beis HaMikdash. And that Beis HaMikdash, of course, will never be destroyed. There's Machlokes how it will be built, through the Rebbeinu Shlom, through man, or a combination of them, Machlokes. But in any case, that Beis HaMikdash is built. And Klai Yisrael returns to its former utopian times under Shlomo HaMelech, when you had the Beis HaMikdash. There was tremendous peace, tremendous prosperity in Klai Yisrael. They're still going, but there's a tkufa, a time period of tremendous well-being to Klai Yisrael. All Klai Yisrael is now in Eretz Yisrael. They're learning Torah. There's tremendous prosperity and peace in Klai Yisrael. There's the Or Rishon that, of course, has been revealed. And this is, of course, all going on. And the fourth task of the Mashiach is that the three basic enemies of Klai Yisrael, Esav, as represented by Western civilization, especially America, and especially Christianity, Yishmael, as represented, of course, by all the Arab countries, the Islam, and so on, and the Erev Rav, that mixed multitude of Jews that have caused such incredible suffering to the Jewish people. All three of these kinds or types, of course, are subjugated. And no more do they dominate the Jews. The Jews now are freed of the domination and subjugation of these peoples. They've completely lost their power. And this is what the Tekufa of Mashiach ben Yosef is all about. To bring the Yidden and the Aseres HaShvatim to Eretz Israel, to reveal that all Rishon, Terah, the Pnimius of Terah, to build the Beis HaMikdash, to subjugate those three peoples, and to usher in a beautiful, peaceful time of prosperity. Now, it seems like everything is good, right? However, it's not. There arises an individual who's called Armulus, or Goig. In Yechezkel, he talks about Goig, the war of Goig, from the land of Magog. And this Goig, what happens that basically at that time is that the Goyim, even though they are no more dominated Jews, but they begin realizing that their way of life is over. The entire, all the religions of the Goyim, their entire life of prosperity in terms of tremendous materialism, this is gone. That's the end of Hollywood, the end of the entire glamour that America has to offer, the end of this entire McDonald kind of stance. You know, it's just this entire narcissism, materialism, greed, the oil companies, that's it, that's the end of it. And they realize, because there's a tremendous hashpo on the Bria from the Rabbeinu Shalom. So there arises an individual who's called Armulus, or Goig, from the land of Magog. Nobody really knows who that individual is, even from what land. And he will try to unite all the nations of the world to war against Klal Yisrael, and especially the Mashiach ben Yosef. Because they realize that their way of life is dying. That's it. It's all over. The billions of Goyim realize that their way of life has been tremendous error and it's gone. So what Armulus or Goyim tries to do is to reunite all the nations to war with the Mashiach ben Yosef. Now, that's called the Mechama of Goyim in the land of Magog. And the war, of course, is against Mashiach ben Yosef. Now, at this point in history, there's a machlokes of what happens. And it's very significant which way it turns out. An argument. There's a dispute in Chazal of exactly what transpires. I have brought you until the Mashiach ben Yosef, having brought everybody to Eretz Israel, and there's a time of prosperity, then the Goyim reunite and try to, of course, take over what they lost. And as I said, that at this time, there's a machlokes of what happens. Now, the machlokes is, the Gemara in Masechta Sukkah says, it's talking there about a hesped, the Gemara talking about some kind of eulogy being sang. So it asks, who's the eulogy on? So it answers, the eulogy is on the Mashiach ben Yosef, because it wants to bring some kind of proof. And incidentally, it brings this pasuk. So it seems from Bavli, from the Gemara itself, that the Mashiach ben Yosef will die. In other words, Armulus, or Goig, will be successful. He will succeed in killing the Mashiach ben Yosef. And unfortunately, what it means is not only the Mashiach ben Yosef dies, but that Klal Yisrael goes back into the Golos. That's what it really means. That the Goyim again dominate and subjugate Klal Yisrael, and that they go through tremendous Yisurin again for many years. That's what the significance of the death of the Mashiach ben Yosef is. Now, that's what the Gemara Bavli says. Now the Zohar, in two places, one place in the Zohar says the Mashiach ben Yosef also will die. So again, that's again in accordance of Bavli. And again, that doesn't only mean that Mashiach ben Yosef dies, it means that the entire Klal Yisrael goes back into Golos. That's what it means. And that they are subjugated by the Goyim, and obviously that when the Goyim take over again, they're going to try to undo what Klal Yisrael did while they were not under the hands of the Goyim, which of course is tremendous pain and suffering for Klal Yisrael. Of course, that's an awesome, tragic event for Klal Yisrael. Now, there's another Zoya that says the Mashiach ben Yosef will live. That's number one. Number two, Api Kabbalah, especially according to Rabbi Moshe Chaim Litzatoy and the Vilna Goyen. They say the Mashiach ben Yosef will not die, he will live. And they say it's merumas, it's indicated or hinted in the Pasuk when they told Yaakov Avinu that Yosef was still alive in Egypt. He thought he was dead. So he says, O Yosef b'ni Chaya, my son Joseph yet lives. That means that the Mashiach ben Yosef, although he's supposed to die, will not die. Yosef still lives. O Yosef Chai, Yosef still lives. And that pasuk is meramez that the Mashiach ben Yosef does not die, that Amilus is not successful in killing Mashiach ben Yosef. Now, the question of course is, what does it mean that Mashiach ben Yosef will not die? And the idea there is that, as the Ramchal says in the Vilna Goyen, that first of all, what the Rebbe Shalom did is the Mashiach ben Yosef is really mechuyav misa. He has to die because of different ideas that have gone on in history, which I have not gone into. But there's an inyan that the Mashiach ben Yosef is chayav misa. He is subject to death according to din, whatever. But what the Rebbe Shalom has done is that instead of casting one large stone on, as if, for instance, you want to kill somebody, so you can throw a big boulder on him, or you can throw over many years small rocks, and the pain is equivalent to the amount of pain that he got from the big boulder, but since it's been distributed over many years, it's not a death blow. So what the Rebbe Hashem has done is subjected the Mashiach ben Yosef to the Yisurin over many years, 2,000 years, or whatever. And as a result of that, the retribution of the Mashiach ben Yosef that he has to die has been fulfilled already over 2,000 years or whatever, and the Yisurin has been suffered over many, many years, so therefore he will not die. It's not a death blow. And he has fulfilled the idea that the Inyan of Mashiach ben Yosef has to be nifsak, has to be terminated. He has fulfilled that idea. And they say that has been brought about because of the Yisurin, the sufferings that Moshe Rabbeinu and Dovra HaMelech and the Tzaddikim throughout all the generations have suffered. That's why he will not... They accepted a lot of the Yisurin of the Mashiach ben Yosef himself that he would have to die. So therefore he doesn't. Also the Tefillahs of Klal Yisrael. When you say in Shmona Esrei, Matzmiach Keren Yeshua, you are praying for the life of the Mashiach ben Yosef. Because Keren, Matzmiach Keren Yeshua, that he should raise the horn of salvation. And that horn refers to the Kanei Re'eim. So therefore, because of the tefillahs, the prayers of Klal Yisrael, and the Yisurin and the sufferings and the prayers of Tzaddikim, Mashiach ben Yosef will not die. Instead, like I told you, it's like you throw small stones at an individual, and the Yisurin, the pain suffered, equals the amount of pain as if you had thrown a boulder on him, but it's, since it's spread over, it's not a death blow. So therefore, as I say, Rav Moshe Chaim Tzate, the Vilna Goyen, and many Mekubolim hold that Mashiach ben Yosef will live, which means that Goig or Amilus will not be successful and he will be vanquished. That's what it means. But in any case, getting back to the idea, Mashiach ben Yosef will not die according to these people, and therefore Goig or Amilus will not be successful. Now, how will he be vanquished? Because at that time, what happens is that the Mashiach ben David arrives. And everybody, of course, is wondering what happened to Mashiach ben David. The Mashiach ben David now arrives, joins the Mashiach ben Yosef. And Mashiach ben David essentially wipes out Amilus. And the way he wipes it out already is no more Yidei Teva. He does it magically. And the way he does it, for instance, is a medrash that says that they tell the Mashiach ben David that such and such a nation is rebelling against you. So he merely says, let a plague come on that nation. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happens. In other words, the way he vanquishes the Goyim is no more Ayidei Teva. You see already Nisim, just incredible miracles transpire through the Mashiach ben David. And the Ikka Tachlas of the Mashiach ben David, the major ideas of the Mashiach ben David, of course, is to maintain what the Mashiach ben Yosef has initiated. And what he does is he completely, for all time to come, and that's the end of it, he completely dominates the Goyim. He destroys Amilus, Goyig, he destroys a great deal of the nations, the Goyim, who are warring with Klal Yisrael. And in addition to that, and this is his major idea, he destroys the Sitra Achra. He destroys the Mal Hamavis. In other words, that he destroys the Yetzirah from the heart of an individual. And therefore, what he does is he ushers in the Messianic time, the Yemos HaMashiach. And that is the next Kufa. So the first one we had was Ikvus of the Mashiach. The second Kufa was Aschalta de Geula, was when the Mashiach ben Yosef begins his function, and then he brings everybody to Eretz Israel. And then you have the war, and the Mashiach ben David comes, and like I said, he kills Arminus, and he ushers in what's called the Messianic time, the Yemos HaMashiach, which is of course the utopian time, that the Nevi'im refer to. And what exactly transpires in Yemos HaMashiach? What kind of a time is it? Well, then you begin to see the psukim that the Nevi'im say become this Kayim, fulfilled. Where v'nigla kvod Hashem, the glory of the Ribbono Shel Olam is revealed throughout creation. In a far greater extent was Mashiach ben Yosef. That there's an incredible amount of knowledge that proliferates throughout the Bria, where it says that Das, knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam, will be from one sea to the other sea, that the entire Bria knows and studies the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the second idea that you have in Yemos HaMashiach. In other words, people are no more interested in different kind of pursuits. Everybody is running to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everybody's on the contrary, running to Hashkafa Shurim, running to learn Torah, to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam, and to do the mitzvahs. Everybody's trying to do that. In addition, there will be an incredible peace, and that's where it says the wolf will dwell with the lamb. There is no more Mohammed. There's no more conflict. There's no more friction between individuals. An incredible harmony or peace. There will be tremendous hatzlocha, prosperity, for the entire Bria. There's no such thing, of course, as deterioration or death or whatever. And I'll mention Tchias HaMesim in a minute. In addition, all Goyim will run after Yidden, because only through a Jew can a Goy receive, only a Jew can receive some kind of ruchnius. And therefore, like it says in the Navi, that thousands of Goyim will grab onto the cloak of a Jew, and they'll beg him to teach him Torah, because only through the cloak, only through a Yid can the Goyim experience any kind of ruchnius. And as it says, that each Jew will have thousands of Goyim as servants, not because he's subjugating them, because that's exactly what they want to be, because they realize that in serving the Jew, that's exactly how they also come to know the Ribbono Shel Olam, and perhaps also have some shaychus to the tremendous ruchnius that is happening at that time. In addition, what will happen is that Tchias HaMesim will occur. And the Yemos HaMashiach is when Tchias HaMesim, resurrection of the dead, occurs. That all tzaddikim, all those people who are worthy of resurrection, of coming to life again, come back to life. And the bodies that they come back in, of course, is not subject to any disease, any death, any deterioration, any pain whatsoever. Gone is the entire idea of death and deterioration or decay. The new bodies that people has, of course, is very different than the bodies that they shed. Now, those people who did not die yet, and they lived through the Yemos HaMashiach, they must experience death, but they will remain dead for, let's say, 2 or 3 minutes, or 5 minutes, or an hour, whatever the Chazal say. They remain dead for a short amount of time, let's say for an hour or whatever, and then they are given a new body, because all people must experience death. But their Tchias HaMesim, if they are worthy of Tchias HaMesim, happens, of course, in a very short time, because that's exactly when all this is happening. So at that time, you will be seeing all the Tzaddikim and Tanoim, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu and so on, all the people, all the Klal Yisrael that merited Tchias HaMesim will be alive at that time. And they will all have new bodies. And as I said, each person that dies will be given himself a new body. So therefore, Tchias HaMesim happens in the Yemos HaMashiach. Also, what's very important to know is that there is no free will at that time in Yemos HaMashiach. Obviously, if there's no Yetzirah, if there's no force of evil, then there's no temptation of man anymore. So even though man retains the capacity to choose freely, but there's no alternative choice. There's no choice. If you can only choose, there's no more what the Rabbi Hashem says, Uvochartu b'chaim. Hinei nesati lechem esachaim esamavus. I give you life and death. Choose life. Uvochartu b'chaim. Even if you have the ability to freely choose, if there's no mavus, so then what, in effect, there really is no free will, even though potentially there is. So therefore, because the Sitra Achra is destroyed, therefore there's no more Yetzihara, there's no more temptation. And as such, there's no more Bechira. And of course, besides the fact that the Sitra Achra will be destroyed, the fact that the covered, the Shechina will be so Nizgala, that the presence of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will be so revealed throughout the universe, that of course nobody will do any sin, because how do you do a sin in the presence of such incredible amount of divine presence? It's like the Malachim. They don't do any chatoim because they are literally in the presence of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. When you're standing in the presence of the king in his court, in his room, throne room, obviously nobody can tempt you, even if there was a tempter. So therefore, at the time of the Yemos HaMashiach, there is no more Yetzirah, there's no more Bechira in that sense. Everybody will be serving the Rebbeinu Shel Olam behechrach, imperatively. Means that's exactly what they must do, because there is no alternative choice. The truth is so obvious that there is nothing else you can do. There's no more hester, there's no more choshech, there is no more concealment of the truth that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is the only one in the Bria. At that time, the attribute of God called his Yichud Shlitosoi, the revelation of the absolute supremacy, authority, and unity of God over all creation will be obvious to all. That's when his Yichud Shlitosoi is obvious. And that's what it means, V'hoyu Hashem L'melech HaKol HaRetz, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will be a king on that day. And Bayomo Yihyeh Hashem Echad Shmei Echad, on that day, God will be one, of course, and his name will be one. And I explained previously that the appellation that we ascribe to him, that he's an Echad, will be seen on that day. Not like today, where we know, we say he's one, unity, absolute supremacy, but we don't see it because we see evil proliferating all over the place. We see a multiplicity of many forces. However, in Yemos HaMashiach, what we described him as will be actually what he appears as, the Yichud of the Bria, that absolute authority, the absolute supremacy, kingship, Malchus in the Bria. So therefore, everybody will be serving the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, not forced in the sense that everybody doesn't want to do it, as if you're forcing some slave to serve his master, but everybody will be running, tripping over everybody else's feet, to run to serve the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. It will be a time that will be incredible goodwill, no more achzoris, no more cruelty among people, no more midas rois among people. Everybody will be in the madriga of tremendous tzaddikim. That's what's going to happen in the Yemos HaMashiach. We've gotten a certain understanding of the Yemos HaMashiach and the sequence of events that will transpire. And the Yemos HaMashiach, as I said, is a period of time in Olam HaZeh. It is not Olam HaBo. It is not the future world. It is a certain time period, a utopian time period for all Jews, when once and for all Jews will serve the Rebbeinu Shel Olam the way it has to be. And God, once and for all, will reveal his presence, his absolute unity, supremacy, and the consequence, of course, is it's a utopian time for religion, for the Jewish nation. Now, this will, of course, occur only until 6,000 years. In other words, the period of the Yemos HaMashiach, the Messianic times, can only last till the year 6,000. Therefore, between now and then, of course, we are standing in 5,742. Therefore, we have 258 years left to the year 6,000, which means that the Mashiach, both Mashiachin, Mashiach ben Yosef, and the Mashiach ben David, both had to have come already, have reigned, and then at the year 6,000, it's all over. So therefore, there's only 258 years, not until the Mashiach comes, but until the end of the Messianic time, which obviously means that he's going to come far before that. And hopefully the world has already gone on for 5,742 years, which is, so therefore what is really left? 3% of the time elapsed. There's only 97% of the time has elapsed already of 6,000 years. So hopefully that the Yemos HaMashiach will be some kind of significant time, where he won't come in the last 40 years and reign and so on, like some Shittas in the Gemara say, but that he will come hopefully in our generation, and that the Messianic time will last over 200 years. Now, as I said, the Yemos HaMashiach will have ended by the year 6000. That is the end of Olam Hazeh as we know it. That is the end of this world, that is the end of the experiment called mankind, that is the end of the time that man earns reward. So therefore, we see that Olam Hazeh consists basically of three periods. The first period is Adam Rishon before the sin. Man, Adam Rishon, was on a certain level before he did the sin. He was supposed to not have done the sin, and as a result of that, he would have ushered in the Yemos HaMashiach, and then eventually Olam Haba. The second period is after he did the sin. Man radically changed after the Chet, and that, of course, has lasted the rest of the 6,000 years until the Yemos HaMashiach. And the third period of man is Yemos HaMashiach. And the Yemos HaMashiach, as I'll explain a little further, is really a return to Adam Rishon before the Chet. In other words, man has come from Adam Rishon before he sinned, Adam Rishon after he sinned, and then the Yemos HaMashiach is a return to the time period of Adam Rishon before the Chet. So man makes a complete cycle in terms of his perception of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that in Yemos HaMashiach, mankind will be in the Madrega, the level of Adam Rishon before the Chet, in terms of his perception of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So man makes that complete cycle. And then at the end of 6,000 years, that is even the end of the time period of Adam Rishon before the Chet. Therefore, the three time periods are Adam Rishon before the Chet, there's Adam Rishon after the Chet, and the Yemos HaMashiach, which is the restoration or the return of the time period of Adam Rishon before the Chet, and then at the end of 6,000 years, the world stops. Now, what does that mean? It means that the world, the universe as we know it, is destroyed. Chazal say that after 6,000 years, that 6,000 years is the Shisa Alfei Shnin, this world lasts 6,000 years, which is the time period of Olam Hazeh, in which man is tested in order to earn reward. And at the end of 6,000 years, man is, the world is then Chorov, Chat Chorov. For 1,000 years, the world is desolate. The world is destroyed. The universe, as we know it, is destroyed. And the question, of course, is what happens afterwards, and what happens to all those people that have new bodies, right, in Tchias HaMesim, while that Chat Chor, what really is going on? So now I'm going to begin talking about what is the aftermath of the Yemos HaMashiach, and what happens until Olam Haba, and then what happens in Olam Haba. The entire sequence of events that happens in terms of the Yemos HaMashiach, the Ikvus de Mashiach, the Aschata de Geula, the Geula, the redemption itself, and the Yemos HaMashiach, and also I'd mentioned that these are the three time periods of Olam Hazeh, is Adam Rishon before the Chet, Adam Rishon after the Chet, and also the Yemos HaMashiach, which is a return of mankind to the state of what it was Adam Rishon before the Chet. Now, what happens after 6,000 years when the world is destroyed? Now, I'm now going to speak about what happens after the Yemos HaMashiach. There are three periods that one has to know in terms of after the time of the Mashiach. The first time period that is the time period of 6,000 years. And as I mentioned, that itself consists of three different time periods within 6,000 years. The second time period is from 6,000 to 7,000 years. That's 1,000 year period. And the third time period is after 7,000 years, from 7,000 until approximately 9,000, or actually 7,000 years and after. This is the third time period. Now let's understand each time period, what it all means, why it has to be, what it's all about. In order to understand that, we have to begin understanding something which I had mentioned a while back, and that is that when a person does a mitzvah, the entire what a person is able to do as a result of the mitzvah is to purify his body. The Rebbeinu Shlomo took the neshama of a person and put it into a guf, into a body. Now that body is an obstacle, it's an impediment to the neshama's experiencing the Rebbeinu Shlomo as its source of existence. Because as long as it has a physical body, it cannot experience the Rebbeinu Shlomo in the exact proportion of how gross that physical body is. Now Adam Rishon's physical body, and it was physical, was much finer than what we have now. Therefore he experienced Rebbeinu Shlomo in a much greater capacity. After his chet, the physical body became far more gross or dense. So therefore, we of course experience Rebbeinu Shlomo almost nothing. That's how great the physical body impedes itself on the neshama. Now, what the Rebbeinu Shlomo wanted is that the neshama, or the individual, when it does the mitzvah, it would mezakech the body, and it would purify that body to the exact degree that it did the mitzvah. And as the body becomes more and more purified, the obstacle that the body presents to the neshama experiencing the Rebbeinu Shlomo becomes less and less. And as a person does more and more mitzvahs, the body is more and more purified, and therefore the neshama experiences more and more of the Rebbeinu Shlomo. That process is called zikuch haguf, or purification of the body. Therefore we see that the process of zikuch haguf is really the ultimate, what the Rebbeinu Shlomo wants. The Rebbeinu Shlomo wants an individual to purify the body, to remove the obstacle to the neshama experiencing the Rebbeinu Shlomo. That's why a person has a body. It stands as an obstacle, and the person must purify that body. Now, because Adam Rishon did the chet, I had mentioned that evil became dovuk, or it clung to the body, so therefore that body can no more be purified even if you do a mitzvah. That's why a person must shed the body, that's death, get a new body, and that new body will be purified according to the exact amount of mitzvahs that that individual did. So therefore we begin to see that zikuch haguf, which means purification of the body, is the essential process that must occur before the neshama experiences the Rebbeinu Shlomo. And that an individual, because of the chet of Adam Rishon, could not purify his body, therefore the body must be removed from the neshama, so therefore the idea of death occurred. That's the whole idea of death, is the separation of the body from the soul. And therefore when the person gets a new body, he will be able to purify that body exactly in accordance with the amount of mitzvahs that he performed while he was alive. And therefore the soul, as I mentioned, waits in Olam HaNeshamos, the world of souls, until it goes back into the world and gets a new body. So therefore a person potentially, after the sin of Adam Rishon, purifies his body. Not in actuality, but the actuality, the actualization of that purification of his mitzvahs will occur when he gets that new body. Now, that was just a short summary of zikuch haguf, which I had mentioned previously. Now, if that's the case, we see that in order for the neshama to perceive the Rebbeinu Shlomo, to perceive the unity of the Rebbeinu Shlomo, to perceive the Rebbeinu Shlomo as its shirish, which means it comes more and more contact intrinsically with the Rebbeinu Shlomo, you must remove or purify the body. That's the only way it happens. And you know what, it's very similar to, like, we know that the body has tremendous urges, that it, and the person, the individual, is constantly aware of different urges and so on. Did you ever try to concentrate on something? And when you're concentrating on something, let's say there's noise in the background. The noise in the background disturbs or disrupts your concentration, because you can only be attuned, as long as there's something impinging itself on your senses, you cannot give a complete concentration or focus in on what you want to think about, right? Now, if you remove all background noises, then you can concentrate fully. It's very similar. The neshama cannot concentrate fully or be aware of the Rebbeinu Shlomo as long as there's background noises. And what are those background noises? The urges, the physical experiences that the neshama keeps impinging itself on the of the guf, the physical experiences of the guf keeps impinging itself on the neshama, so it breaks the concentration that the neshama has on the Ribbono Shel'olam. That's sort of like an example to understand of how the neshama is able to impinge itself, the guf is able to impinge itself on the neshama is concentrating or being able to perceive the Ribbono Shel'olam. Therefore, the upshot, the ultimate idea, is that the guf must be purified, and that's when the neshama is able to perceive the Ribbono Shel'olam. Now, what happens after the universe is destroyed is a slow process where the guf becomes purified. Now, as such, we can distinguish five different levels that occur in terms of the relationship between the body and its soul. The first level, the lowest level, is the level of 6,000 years, where the body, where the neshama does not experience itself at all as a soul. You look out, you all look out at me, right? You're not aware that what you're really looking out, that you are a neshama looking out. You're not aware of that. As far as you're concerned, you're looking out from your physical body, that you are only a person, a human being with a physical body. You're not aware of your true nature, that you are really a divine neshama. So therefore, in this world of 6,000 years, the first thing is that you are not aware of your true nature, the neshama. And the second thing is that your body is completely impinging itself on your consciousness. All the physical experiences, the urges, the instincts, and so on, demand to be heard, and you must fulfill them. And in this world, they all get fulfilled. You feel hungry, you've got to go and eat. You've got to meet the demands of the body. You feel thirsty, you've got to drink. You feel tired, you've got to go to sleep. So the physical body makes its demands on the soul, and you fulfill those physical demands, and you are not even aware of your true nature as an neshama. Therefore, we can say that the shlita, the domination of the guf over the neshama, is complete in this world of 6,000 years. That's the first relationship that the neshama has with the guf, where the guf is a shlita, has a complete domination over the body, to such an extent where even the body is not aware of the individual, I should say, is not even aware of its own nature as a ruchnistic being. And you must fulfill the nature or the urges of the body. That's the first level. This is 6,000 years. And it was meant to be that way. Of course, what was meant to be is that you should fulfill all the urges of the body in accordance with the will of the Ribbono Shel'olam, the Ratzon of the Ribbono Shel'olam, to eat for his Ratzon, just like you do all the mitzvahs. Not that you should fulfill all the urges of the body in response to your own will. And that's the entire Indian of the Avodah. The whole Indian of the Avodah is to do the urges of the body in accordance with the will and the regulations and the conditions that the Ribbono Shel'olam wants you to impose on that body. Not to do what with the body to fulfill its urges in accordance with what you want to do with the body. That's the whole Avodah. To do what the body, with the body, to fulfill the needs of the body in terms of what the Ribbono Shel'olam wants you to do. Not in terms of your own self, your own desires, or rather your own rotzen. So that's the first stage of creation, which is 6,000 years. Now, the second stage is called of the relationship between the neshama and the guf, going from the lowest point and above. The guf, no more, the body, no more exercises a control over the neshama. The individual at that time is aware of himself as a neshama, but he lives side by side with his body. He is a soul within the body. It means that you are aware of yourself as a neshama, and you actually feel what it means to be in the neshama, but you also are feeling the physical experiences that the guf is demanding. The difference is that you do not have to give in to any urges of the body. The faculties or the functioning of the human body is suspended, not negated, merely suspended. You see? So in other words, you as a neshama are aware of yourself as a neshama, and you also have this physical body around you, and you feel what it means to have a body in all its pratim, in all its particulars, but the urges do not have to be met. You don't have to eat or sleep or drink or any of these physical urges. It's not necessary. The body just hangs over the neshama with all its physical kivet, heaviness, exerting its complete being over the neshama, but you don't have to fulfill any of the urges of the guf anymore. That is equivalent to the same idea when Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went to receive the Torah, he went up to Shemayim, right? For 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu did not fast 40 days. That's a mistake. He didn't fast 40 days. It's the equivalent of his fasting, not eating and not drinking. Moshe says that I didn't drink or eat for 40 days. It doesn't mean he fasted. It means that when Moshe Rabbeinu went into Shemayim, what happened then is that the guf left its mokum, its spot, which is this world, and it went into the ruchnistiger world, and all its faculties or properties were suspended. He felt the body, but he didn't have to eat. The body fulfilled all of its needs through spirituality, through the neshama. But the person still had a physical body. In other words, that second stage, where you had the neshama and the body coexisting side by side, the guf impinging, being felt, but its faculties or functioning is suspended. And the neshama being aware of itself is the same idea when Moshe Rabbeinu went to receive the Torah. He didn't fast in terms of eating or drinking. It wasn't necessary to eat because the neshama, even though it maintained its properties and so on, did not need to be fulfilled that way. In Shemayim, it could fulfill all its necessities through spiritual, not through physical needs. So it wasn't necessary to eat. However, Moshe Rabbeinu had a full body. He did not shed his body. He went into Ruchnistiger world, whatever that is, with a full body. But again, it wasn't the same. He experienced his neshama, and the body did not need to eat or sleep because it suspended its activities, even though it was felt as a complete physical body with all its physical experiences. That's the second relationship between the neshama and the guf. And that second level was reached by Moshe Rabbeinu when he went to receive the Torah. The third level is when the neshama and the guf now begin changing the relationship. The guf begins changing not its place, but its very substance. It's a change in etzem. It substantially begins changing. What does that mean? It means that the guf itself becomes fine. That's when we begin to see zikuch haguf, that the neshama is able to refine the body. So the physical body literally changes slowly. And at that time, that third stage is when the neshama feels the physical body, but it feels only some of the physical experiences. Now many of the physical experiences that the body demands on the neshama is gone. It's been changed. The body only reminds the neshama of certain physical experiences, light ones, perhaps just the heaviness of having a body on it, whatever. But the person is certainly completely aware of its soul, and it will always be that way. And the guf now begins to change its very substance, and it only has some of the physical experiences left, the light ones. But many of the physical experiences that the guf has on the neshama is gone. That is the beginning of what's called zikuch. The neshama is now changing the very nature, the very substance of the physical body. And as such, what's happening? The neshama is beginning to experience more and more of the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Because it's a zeluma zeh. That's the third level. The fourth level is when the neshama now experiences the body, but in a very general way. It no more experiences physical experiences of the human body in any detail. Only as a general heaviness that there's something obstructing it to a small extent. In other words, it's like a person who has gone through years of yisurin, many different pains, stomach aches, back aches, and so on. And after a while, when he's been cured, he no more experiences the specific pains, but he rather experiences this generalized heaviness or exhaustion, the generalized painful experiences that he's had. The same idea. The neshama no more experiences the body in terms of any specific levels. This is the fourth level. Any specific levels, any specific needs, whatever. It merely experiences the essence of physicality. Just it experiences a physical structure outside of itself, without really experiencing the physical urges or whatever that emanate from this physical body. This is the fourth level. It experiences the body in a general way. The fifth level is when it no more experiences the body, period. The entire concept of physical substance ceases to be, although it still exists. What does that mean? It's what's called inert. Like you look at a radioactive material that's completely inert. The physical body is still there. It's physical. But it's completely inert. It's almost like the physical body around the neshama has completely turned to glass. It's a completely different substance. It exists, but it exercises nothing. Even the memory is no more of what it meant to have a physical body. That's gone. And that fifth level, of course, is where the neshama perceives the Ribbono Shel Olam far greater. Because the physical body exists, it has metzius, but it has no shlita. It's inert, it has no control whatsoever. And it is so bottle, it is so void, connected in terms of the neshama, that it's almost that it goes completely after the dictates of the neshama. It doesn't obscure. It's not an obstacle anymore to the neshama. It's merely an appendage that is completely inert, and that remains forever. That guf, in the form of its inertness, complete loss of any kind of exercising, any kind of control, even in a general way, of physicality is gone. It is now a metzius of guf, but it's completely inert. And the neshama is no more subjugated to any memory even of what it meant to have a physical body. That's gone. Those are the five levels of the relationship between the neshama and the guf. Now, these five levels of the neshama and the guf, of course, are dependent on the amount of presence and concealment of God. Which means that in Olam HaZeh, God conceals his being awesomely, tremendously. Therefore, the guf has this incredible control over the neshama. In the second level, where the functions of the guf are suspended, God reveals himself far greater. So therefore the neshama now cannot exercise its physical abilities. It's suspended. So therefore the second level is when the Ribbono Shel Olam reveals much more of his presence. So therefore the guf becomes more passive in that sense, more it loses control. The third level is where the Ribbono Shel Olam exerts his presence or reveals his presence to such a degree where the guf begins changing its material substance, where only some of its pratim are felt, some of its details, some of the physical experiences are felt. And the fourth level is where his galus, the revelation of God, is felt to such an extent where the neshama only feels the general notion of what it means to have a physical body, although not any particular ideas of what it means to have a physical experience. And the fifth level is when the hester of the Ribbono Shel Olam is a mashehu, means a dot. When it means that the revelation of God is so awesome, is so all-encompassing, that the neshama ceases to be, the guf ceases to be that which it was in any kind of exertion, and it loses all its properties, and all that remains is a vestige, some kind of metzius called guf that is so fine that it has almost lost its identity, and the memory even of what it means to have a physical body is gone, although it still retains its identity as something different than the neshama. So in that sense it's physical. These are the five levels of the relationship between the neshama and the guf, and how they relate to the presence and the concealment of God. And that's how these levels occur, because God reveals himself or he conceals himself. Now, how do we relate that back to the time periods? Once we understand these different levels, we now can begin understanding what the time periods are all about. The lowest level, which I had mentioned, when the individual does not experience his own soul, as far as he's concerned, he's only a body. He's only a human being. And that's all he has is a physical body. And also that the guf has complete control in the sense that it exerts all its functions, its urges and instincts, and you must live up to those instincts. In other words, you must feed it. You must give it nourishment and so on. In a physical universe, this is the Shisa Alfei Shnin, the 6,000 years. That is what the Rebbe Mishnah wants. He wants the guf to have complete ascendancy over the soul, where not only does it exercise its powers, its control, but you must fulfill the demands of the body by giving it whatever Olam Hazeh has. But the Rebbe Mishnah wants is to give the body its needs and so on according to the conditions and regulations of the will of God. That's the Avodah. Not to give it to fulfill the needs and demands of the body according to your own will. That's the Avodah. To give the body its needs, its urges and so on, instincts, according to the exact conditions and regulations that the Rebbe Mishnah lays down. And those, of course, are the mitzvahs. Because every mitzvah regulates or somehow controls the way you carry out a physical act. Every mitzvah is a physical act, and the mitzvah reflects itself in the fact that it regulates or it shapes the physical act to conform to the Ratzon HaBorei. That is the first and lowest level of the relationship between the neshama and the guf, where the guf has complete ascendancy over the neshama. And what the Rebbe Mishnah wants is through the Avodah that man should serve his body through the mitzvahs, which is the Ratzon HaBorei. The second time period is when we encounter the second level, when the 6,000 years has finished, the world is destroyed. Now what happens in that 6,000 years? Chazal say that there will be 6,000 years in Chad Chorav. 1,000 years, the universe is completely destroyed. So Chazal say, well, what will the tzaddikim who have new bodies, what will they be doing? God will give them wings, and they will fly above the waters. That's what the Chazal say, that he will give the tzaddikim wings, and they will fly above the waters. There's no more land. Now, what that means, of course, symbolically, doesn't necessarily mean that they'll have wings. What it means is that the second stage will have been reached, like Moshe Rabbeinu. He will give them wings to leave the earth. In other words, the physical body is no more on the earth. It's like Moshe Rabbeinu Bemorim. It's like you, the physical man with his new body enters a ruchnistika universe, a spiritual world, the world of the angels, where he now experiences himself as an neshama, and the physical body, the functions of the physical body is completely suspended. It's still there. You can still feel the individual physical experiences that the guf wants, but it is suspended. It does not have to be fed through a physical earth. It now is fed through the neshama, the ruchnistiga world. So that's the second level, where the world is destroyed. The physical body still maintains its complete existence in the sense that it has all its operations and functions. However, those are suspended, and that is indicated what Chazal mean, that the tzaddikim will be given with their new bodies. It will be given wings and a fly over the water, which means that it takes leave of the earth. It no more has to satisfy the body through the physical earth. That its body now can be satisfied ruchnistik-wise. And that is again equivalent to Moshe Rabbeinu in Shemayim. So therefore, at that time, you'll have the soul and the body as two distinct entities, side by side, coexisting, where the body exists completely the way it always is, a physical body, but not exercising its functions, and the neshama side by side, where the person then, of course, will experience himself as a neshama. This is the inyan of Chad Chorav. That's what it means. That the universe will be destroyed, not man and his body. Because man does not need the physical universe environment to fulfill any of the needs of the body. But the body which man has, which is the body that he has with Tchiyas HaMeisim, will still exist, the body and the neshama. And it will be like Moshe Rabbeinu, and they will be completely in a ruchnistic universe. And that, by the way, is the concept of Shabbos. We have 7 days, right? 6 days you work and 7 days you don't work. You see now the exact simile. Shabbos is you work 6 days, which means that the body exercises its function for 6 days, right? And it feeds itself from the earth, from the physical environment. What happens on Shabbos? You're still a body. You rest. What kind of menucha? It means that the body suspends its activity, but it's still a body. That's the union of Shabbos. Shabbos alludes to the 7,000th year, that 1,000 years in the 7,000th year, when the body suspends its activities and rests, but it's still a physical body with all its urges and so on. This is the idea of Shabbos. Now the 8th day, which already is Lemaila from Shabbos, we begin experiencing the change of the body. So we've now gone through 7,000 years. 6,000 years with a man and his body, Neshama and his body. In the 7,000th year, until the end of 7,000 years, it's like Moshe Rabbeinu in Shemayim, where the body suspends its activities, it has all of its necessities still intact, but you don't have to fill it anymore through a physical environment. You now can give it its ruchnistika, its needs through ruchnistika environment. This is the idea of Shabbos, where the person rests, he still has a physical body, but he doesn't do any malacha. There's no actions anymore. That's the same idea as the guf in Shemayim. It doesn't do any malacha. It can feel all its pleasure through what? Through the neshama. And that's the idea of the neshama yisera. That's the idea that the neshama is mazen, feeds the guf. Just like in Shabbos, that it's the kedusha of Shabbos that feeds the body, that feeds the body what it needs. It doesn't need the malacha, the work, the activity of, you know, of getting money to buy food and so on. Now, in the next that's the 7,000 years. In the 7th to the 8,000th year is a third madrega, and that is where the body begins to change its metzias. That's what's called in Chazal Chidush HaOlam. The universe is recreated in a incredibly purified stage, incredibly purified form. The universe is recreated. That's called Chidush HaOlam. And the body itself begins changing. That's the beginning of Zikuch HaGuf that we spoke about, which was the whole tachlis of Adam Rishon, to purify its body according to its mitzvahs. The body now begins to become purified, Zikuch, and the neshama now feels only some of the pratim, some of the physical experiences of the body. A lot of them are gone, no more. Gone forevermore. But some of the physical experiences are still here, some of the light physical experiences. And of course, this is still an impediment. But this is the beginning. In the year 7001 begins Zikuch HaGuf, which is Chidush HaOlam, where the neshama actually begins changing the body. And there's a partial change. So for that next 1,000 years, until the end of 7,000th year, which is 8,000, there was 8,000 years will have ensued, where the body now gives up part of its properties of functioning. Not merely suspended, but it now doesn't have them anymore. In the next 1,000 year, in the 9,000th year, is the fourth level, where the body actually gives up all its properties, everything. This is, you know, wild 8,400, 8,500, and so on is going on. And therefore, the neshama only experiences the guf, the body, in a general nature. Just what does it mean to have something physical without actually having physical experiences? Now, by the time the year 9,000 arrives, there is no more, as I mentioned, shlita of the guf over the body. By the time the 9,000th year arrives, that is the end of the physical experiences of the body, even in a general way. By the time 9001 arrives, the body has given its complete control up. It has changed completely to the extent where only its metzius, its identity as a physical substance remains. However, it's completely inert. So as such, it is no more an obstacle to the neshama experiencing the Ribbono Shel'olam. And then begins the fifth Madrega, which is the 10,000th year. And we know there's an Indian of, it says, Asiri Yiyakodesh, that the 10th will be holy. By Maisa Behema, the 10th animal will be holy. There's an Indian that the 10th will be holy. So therefore, the 10,000th year begins what's known as Olam Haba. So it takes from 6,000 until 10,000, which is, it's in the sixth, you know, it's the 7,000th year, the 8,000th, and the 9,000th year. It takes 3,000 years for the neshama finally to remove itself of all the influences of the body, and it now begins experiencing the Ribbono Shel Olam in a way which is not conceivable whatsoever. Because what it means in the Olam Haba is that the neshama has a vestige or an appendage of a physical body that is completely inert, completely not functioning at all. It doesn't even remember, basically, it doesn't even remember what it means to have a physical entity at all, because it doesn't exert itself at all. It's merely some kind of appendage where it's almost, it's completely bottled to the neshama, completely annulled, and becomes completely part of the neshama in terms of the neshama's own powers. So therefore, in the beginning of the 10,000th year starts Olam Haba, and like Chazal say, that all the things which the Nevi'im, the prophets, prophesied, were only in Yemos HaMashiach, only in the days of the Messianic times. What will be in Olam Haba, which means the removal of all physical properties or functions, and only the identity of something physical remains, and it's completely inert, which means that one does not even know what it means to have a physical substance, because it doesn't exercise its being in any way. Nobody can understand what that means in terms of the neshama's experiencing God, now that it doesn't have the obstacle of anything physical. Nobody understands what that means, because it's a universe which is completely removed from our hasaga. That is the beginning of Olam Haba, which of course lasts for all eternity. Now, therefore we see, now interesting, Ramchal says that just like in this world, there are many forms of pleasure. There are many forms of pleasure, different ways of having pleasure. He says that even in Olam Haba, there will be many forms of pleasure. In other words, to be nehne miziv ha-shechina, to bask in the glory of the Ribbono Shel Olam, to receive or to understand, to master, comprehend what the existence of God is in terms of our own souls, and with it is an incredible byproduct of Hanor, that itself will be able to be experienced in many different ways, just like we have now in this world. So it's not just one form of pleasure. Obviously, there are many forms of pleasure, even in Olam Haba, just like you have now. So therefore, what we see is that there are three basic periods. The first period is 6,000 years, which I had mentioned, which consists of Adam Rishon before the Chet. Then you have Adam Rishon after the Chet, which is the whole history of mankind. And then you have the Messianic era, which is a restoration of the situation of man as it was to Adam Rishon before the Chet. This is 6,000 years, and this was Olam Hazeh, that man should earn all reward through his merit. Therefore, it's a time of Bechira. After 6,000 years, there is no more free will, because it's not necessary anymore. And that first 1,000 year, the 7,000th year, as an interlude, is when there's a complete suspension of the physical universe, and that's Chat Chorov. And the physical body no more has control in the sense that it must be fed through a physical universe. You now have the coexistence of a neshama and a guf. And at the beginning of the 8,000th year, it's the beginning of Chidush HaOlam, which means that the universe now begins changing physically. And this goes on for several thousand years until you get to the Madrega, where the physical universe maintains its identity as a physical being. However, it has no exertion whatsoever. There's nothing even to identify or to experience that physical notion. And of course, this is Olam Haba, of which nobody has any idea of what it will be at all. And what will be experienced, of course, in Olam Haba in a general way, and nobody of course knows what this means specifically, is that you will experience the Ribbono Shel Olam as your source of existence, intrinsically, not externally, where you become more and more contact with the Ribbono Shel Olam within you, that you are part of Him. This is called Dveikus. And that experience, or that comprehension of the Ribbono Shel Olam as your source of existence, which is, by the way, is the Hasog of Yehuda. That's what it means to be masik, to comprehend the unity of God. Because you comprehend that He really is your source. That's the unity. That you are nothing more than some kind of emanation or manifestation of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That experiencing of the Ribbono Shel Olam as the source of yourself is the Hasogas Yehudai, the comprehension of the absolute unity of God, that there is Einoi Mevadai. That is what's called Dveikus, and that is what the Olam Haba is all about. And the pleasure that one receives there, of course, is infinite. It has no end. And the Hano, the pleasure that one experiences, of course, qualitatively has no comparison. And this goes on forever and ever. And also, one does not, they shouldn't think that a person reaches a certain level and that's it. In Olam Haba, there's a growth. There's a growth in terms of comprehension of the unity of God. And that is infinite. Because just like every aspect of God is an infinite, every midah, every attribute of God is infinite, because He is infinite. So the aspect of His unity is also infinite. To realize God's unity is an infinite process of time. And therefore, in Olam Haba is the Hasagas Yehudai, and therefore man realizes the incredible infinity, the incredible unity of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's an ongoing growth process where we keep realizing more and more of the unity of God, which means that He is our Shirish. So we've come sort of like a complete circle, and we now realize that in the beginning of the Shurim, the idea was to build up the concept of the unity, that the unity is the Avodah, if you recall, the situation in Olam Hazeh is unity. The whole structure of the universe revolves around the aspect of the unity of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And now we come to a complete circle, and we see that with the diminution or the negation even of the physical body itself, that merely means that the unity of the Ribbono Shel Olam is completely realized. So therefore what we see is that in Yemos HaMashiach, in the days of the Mashiach, we will not realize Yichud Mitzi'usai, the unity of God as the only being in the world, Einod Mavadai. We will realize Yichud Shlitosai, that there is nobody else in authority or sovereignty but the Ribbono Shel Olam, that He is the complete and utmost, ultimate master of the Bria, that nothing can deviate whatsoever from what He wants. This is what we realize in Yemos HaMashiach, and everybody realized that. Jews, Goyim, even Goyim that were not Zeicher, really, who shouldn't be Zeicher in terms of mitzvahs, which they don't have, they realize this too. Everybody understands this, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is a Yochid B'Shlitosai, that there is nothing outside of God's will that can oppose Him whatsoever, that He Himself gives existence to an opposing will in the first place. And in Olam Haba, we realize not only Yichud Shlitosai, but we realize far more infinite, far greater, as the Yichud Mitziusai, Einod Mavadai, that in existence there is nothing else really but the Ribbono Shel Olam. And there is that Hasaga that forms Olam Haba, which goes on Lenetzach Nitzachem. I have mentioned that Tzaddikim in Olam Haba have continuous growth in Hasagas Yehudai. This is mentioned in an interesting way by Chazal. Chazal say that Tzaddikim ain lehem menucho in Olam Haba. We have to understand what does this mean. We know that in Olam Hazeh there is no menucho for Tzaddikim, because there is always the Avodah. They are always being oved, doing mitzvahs in order to be zeicher for Olam Haba. But what does it mean that in Olam Haba there is no menucho? What it means is that there's no menucha, there's no rest. In other words, there's no stationary or standing point. A person does not reach a certain level of hasog in Olam Haba and remain stationary. there's a constant growth. That is what's meant by Sadiqim Einahem Nuchen Ulim Habor. That in Ulim Habor, there's a constant growth. There is no Menucha. There is no standing at one point, perceiving only a certain amount of Asoga Le'ilim Voed. There is this constant growth, and that's meant by there's no Menucha for Tzadikim. There's a constant movement. There's no rest. Therefore, we see that Ulim Habo, Tzadikim, have no Menucha. In other words, that they are constantly being Masig Yehudoi, greater and greater. One must also understand that when it says that Tzadikim are Masig Yehudoi even more and more continuously in Ulim Habo, it doesn't mean that everybody is Masig the same amount of Yehudoi. The baseline, the initial point, or the starting level where a person is Masig Yehudoi, that depends on the Avodah that he did in Ulim Hazeh. In other words, if he did an Avodah, an Emesah Avodah, he did many mitzvahs both qualitatively and quantitatively, then his baseline, the initial point that he begins to be Masig Yehudoi, is far greater than a Beinoni, an average individual who did a certain amount of mitzvahs, but not anywhere near what a tzaddik did. Even though both grow in Ulim Habo, in their Hasagas Yehudoi, however, the point where they start is very different. It depends on the Avodah. Thus, a tzaddik is Masig Yehudoi far greater than an average person initially and Le'olam Voed, because since he started at a higher point, he will always be at a higher point more than an average person. Thus, even though there's growth in Ulam Habo, however, the amount that each one is Masig is different because what they started, their baseline, is different. This depends again on the Avodah in Ulam Hazeh, and the amount of Avodah of Amolo that a person puts in the Avodah in Ulam Hazeh, this establishes where he begins his Hasagas Yehudoi, and then from that point on, a person always grows. So if a person is a Beinoni, obviously his baseline is much lower. In other words, he starts from a much inferior point, and from that point he begins growing. Therefore, there's of course still a very big difference between a Tzaddik and a Beinoni. Also, what's important to understand is that in Ulim Habo, the level of Hasagah that a Neshama has actually determines the level of being that it is. It's Shlemus. In other words, the being itself is determined by the level of Hasagah that it has. In other words, when in Ulim Hazeh, a person, if he is Masik, the Hasagah, the idea which he comprehends, is external to the self, external to the being. And not only that, but the Hasagah, that idea which the person comprehends, does not in any way change the being. In Ulim Habo, it's different. The actual Hasagah that the Neshama has changes itself. It changes the very being of the Neshama. And not only that, but the Neshama is Masig the Rebbeinu Shlom through itself. It experiences the Rebbeinu Shlom within itself, through its own self or through its own being. And this being changes in accordance with the amount of Hasagah. Therefore, a person who is Masig more of the Rebbeinu Shlom, of course, is Zuchot the far greater Shlemus than a person who is Masig less. So this also is very important. The difference in beings, that the level of Hasagah that an Neshama has in Ulim Habo actually determines the kind or the level of being that it is. It determines the amount of Shlemus that a being has. Whereas in Ulim Hazeh, it's different. Even if you're Masig things, it doesn't affect the self, it affects the being in itself. The Hasagah is external. But in Ulim Habo, it's very different. This then ends the shir.